capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. This may be the last time this year we have everybody that's supposed to be here in the room at the same time. Because I know Dan is gone for a couple of days. Got Troy women's basketball. Where are you guys going to Charlotte? No, where is
Let
it?
Let me sit down and get situated.
Oh, okay. Well, I figured you could yell into the mic. Brian Matthews, I wasn't sure Brian was going to be here because I know he's been taking care of his wife, Yvonne. And Brian, I mean, she had a really unfortunate incident last week, but she's doing all right.
Fell and broke both bones in her right leg, right above the ankle.
Ooh, man. Yeah,
the tib and the fib?
Tib and the fib, that's right.
Yes, and had surgery Wednesday and at home recovering. So her daughter's with her now, so she's not alone.
Her daughter?
Our daughter.
That's my goodness.
Our daughter.
Okay, I'm glad.
Sorry, I have not gotten any sleep.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. And has she gotten any? I mean, that's the thing.
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, that's tough. It's really, really tough. But good. I'm so glad to hear that she's doing okay. I mean, I know that's really, really tough.
Oh, yeah.
So that's
we've been thinking about you, and it's great that you're in here, and all the best to to Yvonne.
Yep. So now let's see. I was saying.
Oh yeah. No. We're
all here. Bill, Dan, Brian, and Drew.
So I'm out tomorrow and Wednesday because Troy, who is off to a blistering start. Yeah, we're really really playing well this year under Coach Rigby, and senior led lineup. But they're pressing more on defense on top of the way they're scoring, and it's been successful thus far. They go to Old Dominion on Wednesday morning. It's a field trip day, education.
You guys have been involved in a lot of those so far. Is that like about the third one this year?
You know what? I'll tell you what though. Like especially if it's like a weekday game, I get the benefit of scheduling a couple of those. And yeah, we've been Missouri, Longwood, and this will be our third one on the road. And we did one at home as well. So I've had to set the alarm quite a bit this season. But no, Troy's playing well, and they just had a girl hit 10 threes in a game last week against Oakwood, which is a program record and the most anyone has hit in a D1 women's game this year. So I mean, she was Imani Jenkins was feeling it from the outside, and it should be fun because Old Dominion is one of the top teams in the conference. Troy had that crazy game a couple of years ago, Bill, where Sun Belt tournament, Brian. Maybe you remember the story too.
Well, you won a game by 60.
No.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, we did. But Old Dominion and Troy, first time they ever played. The first year Old Dominion was in the league. Didn't play in the regular season. We play in the Sun Belt tournament. Old Dominion. So Troy comes back from down like 17 in the fourth quarter. It's 23 Sun Belt tournament quarters. They come back from down 17 in the fourth quarter. It's a 1-point game. Old Dominion is inbounding it, up one, and they use six players. Whoops. They had five players. Right. They got away with it, but they used five. They had five players running around for the inbounds and a sixth player inbounding the ball. And then when they brought it in, they threw it to the open person because it was just 4-on-5. When they throw it in, the player who hadn't legally checked into the game yet jumps back onto the sideline, back onto the bench. And so it's like the old switcheroo. Refs didn't catch it. They score an open layup because it's 6-on-5, and they make it makes it a 3-point game. Troy tries to raise the alarm there right after the play.
I remember you telling. Yeah, I absolutely remember this story.
Shocking that this sort of thing isn't like. My understanding is like in the timeout after that basket, the referees were told, "Hey, we think Old Dominion used six on that last play, and they didn't catch it in the act, and it's not
can't go."
I think the NBA has that as a reviewable play by rule, but college basketball at that point didn't. They may have added it now that everything's reviewable. One would think that they've made a team secretly using a sixth player and then sneaking that player off the floor would be reviewable. No, Old Dominion won by three And that play was a huge reason why. And both
is the revenge game.
Well, Troy, they've played two times since then. They've split them. But Troy, and you know what? As long as those two coaches are at their current jobs, like, it'll always be a, hey, remember that time in Pensacola when ODU used six. So yeah, looking forward to this trip.
Yeah, so we're all here today, though, and we'd love for you to join in if you would, anything you want to talk about. Quite a good bit of things to discuss today, as we can talk some Auburn basketball. The Tigers got a win. It wasn't the sharpest they have played, but they get a double-digit win over Chattanooga in the Holiday Hoopsgiving over in Atlanta. Auburn football, more players are announcing their decisions of entering the portal. Auburn is they're about done with their coaching staff now.
I think so, yeah. Most of the big pieces, for sure.
Is there a tight ends coach? Is the belief
that's the one that I hadn't seen. Has that been
announced? I suppose Brunowski,
I know of.
Brunowski could do it. He's coached tight ends in the past, the special teams coach. So we'll see.
And you're also, it's a little confusing now. It's a little more difficult to determine if you have a full staff because there's really no limit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's only a limit to how many can be involved in the on field. And it's, coaching on the field during the game.
It's wild how coaching staff has changed in 25 years.
You're not kidding. Well, how college athletics has changed.
But how many full-time assistants were there back in 2000?
Used to be 9 or 10, wasn't it?
And then you had one graduate assistant.
Right.
And then you had
have a GA on either side. You could have an offensive and a defensive GA.
You had an NFL guy and you had a high school relations guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically pretty much it. Other than the trainers
and now you have huge staff.
Yes, incredible.
Yeah, we haven't talked to you since, I suppose the biggest news portal-wise for Auburn is Malcolm Simmons.
Yes.
And very much so.
Yeah, I want to sort of withhold judgment until I see how all of the, where everything lands, right, as far as, the other moving parts to Auburn's receivers room. But it's
right now there's a lot of outgoing.
There is a lot of outgoing. I wonder. And I've talked to some people, it feels like there's some speculation that Auburn invested really heavily as far as, like, if you were to look at the top 8, top 10, top 12 highest paid players on the 25 team, it skewed receiver in a way that maybe it didn't at a lot of other schools in the SEC. I've heard reports that, folks think that between Cam, Perry, Eric, and Malcolm, you could maybe have 4 of your top 10 or 12 highest paid players from the 25 season, and it's like if you're paying 4 guys like number one receivers in an era where you have limited resources, that's a luxury, and maybe you could be investing some of that elsewhere, line of scrimmage, quarterback, whatever. But
it makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that's one of those things where if it's a teardown in the receivers room and you don't hold on to anybody, that probably is reason to panic considering how talented the room was a year ago. But the thought that they can't afford to pay Cam or they can't afford to pay Perry and Malcolm what they'd previously been promised or what they'd previously made, if that's what it costs to hang on to pieces you view as more valuable, what do you think, Bill?
I think that makes sense. I think that that's something that we've heard that Alex Golish and his folks have looked at it and said they have numbers. Auburn is in a very good position, I think, to be as competitive as anybody with NIL, but there still have to be there have to be limits. And you've said this, Brian. When somebody can come in and offer an astronomical number, you might be able to match it, but you can't do that with everybody.
Right, you can't. You got to put value on players. You have to put value on position rooms, and you have to stick to that as close as possible. For Auburn last year to have one of the highest paid receiver rooms in the country, and then spend the first 8 games throwing them 5-yard hitches and curls was just astronomically.
It was a waste.
That's just
what it was.
Really. I just still cannot understand what they were doing on offense most of that season.
And I'm not sure of a plan that, I think the idea probably was if you collect enough talent at receiver, you can create this like tidal wave that's, you know, you can overwhelm opponents and you can cover up. How about this? If you have enough talent at receiver, you can cover up problems on the offensive line or problems at quarterback.
If you look back at the receivers, you know, and Hugh Freeze talked about, you know, his receivers that he had at Ole Miss. Those guys weren't catching 5-yard curls, outs. I mean,
it was due to the quarterback that were doing this, but the fact that they had to do this and they had other options, it was so many mistakes made that side of all. Another thing, I do think there's going to be some turnover at the wide receiver room, obviously, definitely. And I certainly think that some more could leave.
I mean, you have half the Freeze Four, right? That's already, right. You know,
you've had Horatio and then Perry and Malcolm, as you mentioned. Cameron King has announced that.
Former walk-on,
he got a scholarship last year. Is there anybody else? I mean, four receivers right there.
Singleton's draft eligible, right? So he's got a couple different things to consider. He has a year of eligibility left if he wants to use
him. Him and Cam Coleman, they'd like to get both those guys back. Oh, and then there's some young guys they'll need to make decisions on, but I think guys like Duke Smith for sure, they want to get back here. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Sam Turner, who broke his leg during practice, Bryce Kane, who this will be his third year, hasn't really gotten a lot of opportunities so far. And I do think that's an area where they can look at portaling at USF. They've got some good receivers there that may or may not enter the portal.
They have two or three that a lot of people would love to have.
And certainly have a quarterback that a lot of people, including Auburn, might want to have. So you are going to see some movement there for sure at those key offensive areas, skill areas.
Yeah, and I like Malcolm.
Look at his last two ball games.
Yeah, if they can make it work at Auburn, but, you know, it seems likely now, you know, when you announce that you're probably not coming back, and curious to see where he ends up, if that's someone that top programs sort of go after as a number one, number two, or if he's someone who, like, you know, could be a number one or a number, like, could be a number one at a rebuilder in, you know, in the SEC or the Big Ten or the ACC. Like, I'm curious to see what kind of market, you know, curious to see what he prioritizes and what he chooses to pursue. What kind of market there is for Malcolm Simmons, who, looks like one of the top sophomore receivers in the country after the way, 300 something yards in
the final two games. Yep.
The last three, right? Yeah. The ones after.
Well, he had almost 300 in the last two.
Yeah.
I mean, 140 plus. Yep. In each of the last two ball games. Yes, that's a good way to go into the portal. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go into the portal, you like to go in with pretty good recent your last two performances.
I think of the 13 players so far that have gotten or said they're going into the portal for Auburn, I think he is the one that they probably fought the most to try to hold on to.
Oh, I'm sure he's the guy that projected as the, you know, surest starter out of the bunch. Auburn's had a couple of offensive linemen go into the portal over the last few days. Yeah. We talked a little bit about DeAndre Carter. I mean, he has played. Favor Edwin had not played, just redshirted this past year.
But like Brian said, I mean, there could be some interest in keeping Eric Singleton, right? And then
there is interest in keeping Eric Singleton.
And then there's Cam Coleman. And it's like, and if you're paying those two guys market value, you know, isn't a third receiver, you know, shopping at the top of the market for a third receiver could be, you know, it could be a luxury that costs you the ability to address other parts of the roster. Mm-hmm. It's like in the NFL, when I know the NFL has a hard salary cap, it's a different deal. But in the NFL,
fantasy draft.
It's excellent.
You've only got so much to spend.
Yeah,
you got to figure how you're going to spend it.
Yeah, and like, you know, think about it. Like, I guess this is a fantasy adjacent proposal, but like in the NFL, if you're spending a lot of money on your starting quarterback, if you got a superstar, like you can spend a lot of money on his backup. Right, like you can spend a lot of money to have you could shop at the top of the market for backup quarterbacks just in case. But if you do that, like, what percentage of your overall salary are you just dedicating to the quarterback room? And I guess in this case, it would be if you wanted to, maybe they could have made it work. But if, you know, depending on what else they do at receiver, it could turn out that a Perry or a Malcolm was. Like it's a luxury they couldn't afford because they want to spend this money elsewhere on the roster.
Yeah, and if you want to look at positions, I think tight end is almost a total rebuild.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think offensive line we mentioned is going to go through some changes, and they need running backs too.
How much did they throw to the tight end at South Florida? Was it a position he used a lot of, or could we see that like?
I believe he used the H-back a lot.
Okay, all right.
And tight end, so I think that's a position they like to use in different ways.
Yeah, it's a total rebuild, including the fact that there isn't a position coach right now.
Right,
like it's a.
Maybe you'll wait till you find out who the coach is. Yeah, and who they're going after.
Those meetings are pretty quiet.
Yeah.
Right now, right.
That room is. I mean, is it Ryan Gee? He's the only
scholarship. Preston Howard is still here, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Does he get to coach? Does Ryan get to coach because he's been there the longest anybody in the room?
Oh man! All right, we're just underway here on the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian, I'd love for you to join in. Quite a few things we can talk about. Heisman get it right? Diego didn't think so. I mean, we can talk about that. Auburn basketball, whatever is on your mind. We've got playoffs getting started. The bowls have already started, but playoffs get started just this Friday. So I mean, we're just around the corner from that. Kalen DeBoer issuing a statement that he is committed to Alabama, and we'll see how committed Alabama is to him if things don't go well this week in Norman.
He's committed to Alabama, but that's not keeping people from wagering on him maybe being Michigan's next head coach, interestingly enough. Yeah. So we'll see. The longer that job stays open, right, especially with the playoffs this weekend, the more you think there could be something too. And I know I've made this point a couple of times, but you know, if DeBoer were to lose on Friday night to Oklahoma, for a guy who made the SEC championship game and the college football playoff in year two, he would be astonishingly unpopular. Mm-hmm. Going back to like and I wonder how many folks would view the season as a success, despite you know those things we just mentioned. And so I think that for DeBoer and for Simpson, it feels like it's a high stakes game for everyone. It's the playoffs, but feels uniquely high stakes for and then also the looming Michigan thing in the background. Like it's high drama on Friday night in Norman.
And speaking of Michigan, I've never seen a fall from grace quite like Sherrone Moore.
Wow.
He went from being the head coach of Michigan to being in jail.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to show you can't get away with things because you're a big man on campus.
I guess he'd been fooling a lot of people.
I guess so. All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Again, wide open. Come on in and join us here on the Monday.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio, Drew at the controls. I'd love for you to join in. The Drive hotline number, 334-321-1390, sponsored by Skybar. So come on in here on this Monday. All right, Brian, it's 2 weeks. Today's 2 weeks that Alex Golish has been Auburn's
football coach.
Okay, yeah. What are your thoughts thus far? I mean,
it just seems like he showed up and went to work. There hasn't been a lot of fanfare. You know, I think Auburn folks are at the point where they're not going to just automatically idolize a coach, so to speak, you know?
Oh, yeah, I think they're much more in Missouri mode.
Yes, very much so, and that's not a negative against Golish or his staff. No. I just think that's the position that people are in. That's my feeling. But I do think he's just been going at it. You can just see that I'm going to work my tail off putting together staff. I'm going to work my tail off, you know, doing this. I'm going to try to find an edge to get good players here like Bear McWhorter, who they just got a commitment from today.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about him. He's a guy that Auburn had recruited.
Yes.
But then committed to and signed with Michigan, but with a mess at Michigan.
Yep.
A lot of their players, I think, will wind up elsewhere. And Bear McWhorter was able to, I mean, he asked for and, of course, received a release from his national letter of intent and committed to Auburn today.
Very good player. Was highly recruited. Also had offers from Alabama, Clemson, Florida, South Carolina, just name a few of his finalists, but I think he had 20 or 30 offers. 6'3", probably offensive guard. You know, the reason he's not a four-star hire is just because probably his size, right?
But because of his height, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. But when you put on the tape, very, very physical. You can tell he plays with an edge. In my opinion, Auburn has lacked that edge on the offense for a number of years now. So I think he's a really, really good pickup. He played with Kyle Ellis at Cass in what part of Georgia is that? I think it's South Georgia, I believe. But yeah, and going to be one of those dudes that fits in perfectly here, I think, culturally, you know, from this area, all that stuff.
Right.
And would not be surprised at all to see him playing pretty early in his career.
Well, and, you know, now look at it, and Auburn's around 20 as far as signees. Now, he won't be able to sign until February. I don't know if he's an early enrollee. If he is, I guess he could go ahead and start classes in January. But but that'll put the number of freshmen at around 20 for this year, and that was expected to be a low number. But a couple of things have happened. One, you've had the coaching change, and there's going to be transition. You're going to have more players entering the portal than you normally would. But I think two, with the increasing of scholarships from 85 to 105, you can sign more guys like this.
You can. And it says in our story that he's going to enroll at spring semester, so I guess that's January, which is great. And nowadays, I just assume everybody that signs.
Just about everyone
only,
does.
There's usually only a handful now that don't enroll in January. So I think that's big. I would put him at the top of my list, along with just a couple others of the most talented offensive linemen, young guys.
Is that five offensive linemen now, I believe?
That may be right.
It's at least four or five offensive linemen that they're bringing in as freshmen this year.
Yeah, because they flipped the kid from South Florida. They got Wilson Zaire. Mm-hmm. They got Bear McWhorter now. Parker Pritchett from Columbus. Another guy I think is probably a guard or tackle. I mean, right tackle maybe. And then who was the guy? Mikel Lundy Foster was the kid that was committed to South Florida. And he's probably guard, maybe right tackle.
What wasn't there a guy late too that signed either late signing day night or the next day that I was thinking he was an offensive lineman?
Oh, Mason Mathis. That's it. Yeah. So that does make five. Yeah. He's more of a tackle body. So yeah. So we'll see. I mean, none of those guys are, you know, five stars, definite, you know, stars right away, but you never know with offensive linemen. It's always going to be a developmental position. Auburn just has not developed many of them lately.
And they've got a young, pretty aggressive offensive line coach and Tyler Hodanik.
Yep.
Guy that played against Auburn in that Central Florida back
that's
in
right.
2017.
Yeah, that's just, yeah.
So he's young.
Yeah,
he's
he
a
is.
Young guy.
That's wild if you think about that. That seems like it was just such 8 years ago, but still, it's that tells me this guy is really, really talented to make that kind of a move that quickly in his career. So good for him.
Yeah, it's an interesting staff that Alex Golish has put together, Brian. I mean, offensively, a lot of carryover from South Florida, which I can't imagine anybody being terribly upset with when you look at the numbers that they put up.
And that's something that, you know, I was on the Doug show earlier today, Bill, and one of the questions was, you know, you look at that carryover from South Florida to Auburn, and a lot of folks are assuming that if South Florida quarterback Byron Brown wants to continue his college football career, he might look to continue playing with those coaches at Auburn.
Yep.
And a couple of receivers could come with him too.
Yeah, and I gave the, you know, Doug asked me about the quarterback room and directions I thought Auburn could go, and I sort of started with the Byron Brown stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think that, like, as much as I'd like to see Deuce Knights development.
Well, I know Charlie's on the other side of the argument that we've talked about.
That's fine. I'd love to see Deuce continue to develop.
Absolutely.
But I don't think that you prioritize his development to the degree where you would turn down having Byron Brown on the team in 2026.
No, they're going to have more than one quarterback, right? You've got to have at least three.
And if acquiring a freshman coming in, the guy who led
the nation in total offense.
And if acquiring Byron Brown costs you Deuce Knight, you know, personally, I think that I would wish Deuce Knight all the best at his new school. But like that's where I would stand on going after Byron Brown and trying to continue what South Florida had rolling in 2025. And I know people, you know, when you point out, look, two quarterbacks in the last 5 years of college football, two quarterbacks have had 3,000-plus passing yards and 1,000-plus rushing yards in one season, Jaden Daniels and Byron Brown. And it's like, well, yeah, but Byron Brown did it against he did it against competition in the American, and which is fair, but you can only play who's on your schedule.
He played a couple of other teams too,
and he did beat Florida at Florida. So yeah. I mean, it's like I don't want to make it because it's not an anti Deuce Knight thing. You know, I think that he's obviously really exciting. You know, there's a ton of but you keep having to use words like potential, right? Like there's development.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I keep hearing that Auburn really, really wants, you know, to keep Deuce Knight, and they're doing everything they can to, you know, to talk to him about possibilities.
Yeah.
I don't think they're trying to hide the fact that they would take a great transfer quarterback, but if he's a guy that has 1 year and you can be there as the number two guy getting some playing time, and who knows, an injury away from being the starting guy. That's what they would love to have.
They would. That's what they love to do. I really think that that's exactly what's going to happen as far as quarterback position. I don't know what decision Deuce will make, but I absolutely believe they're going to bring in the Brown kid from USF. That just makes the most sense in so many ways.
Oh, he understands exactly what Alex Golish, Joel Gordon want offensively, and should just be able to help. Help everybody else learn the offense.
Can be that leader they need for that side of the ball too. And the thing to remember about the quarterback position, if you look at the past Heisman, the recent Heisman Trophy winners that are quarterbacks, Fernando Mendoza, Jaden Daniels.
How many in a row is it?
Yeah, a bunch of them were transfers.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's four in a row.
I think it's four in a row and just, maybe six out of the last nine or something like that.
Yeah, and just in the SEC, I mean, you have two really prominent examples of quarterbacks who – and that's the other thing is, Byron Brown did it against American competition. Yeah, Diego Pavia did it against the Mountain West until he came to the SEC, and then he did against the SEC. And John Mateer did it, for whatever conference Washington State played in.
May not have been in this league, but Cam Ward did it at
Miami, and a Tulane transfer just won the ACC.
Mendoza originally committed to Yale before going to Cal, right. I guess, and then transferred to Indiana eventually. So,
That folks are really excited about, you know, where the Deuce Knight journey could take you. I just, Brown feels like too sure of a thing if he wants to continue his college football career and continue playing for these coaches. I mean, you'd be in extremely good position in year one.
Right, and they need to win right away. Auburn is not going to handle another losing season very well.
You're not going to have to. You're not going to have like. Well, you got to win 9 or 10.
No.
But you've got to. Improve. Right. You got to stop this losing.
The bottom line is going to start suffering real soon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I know. I've been a part of Auburn. I was a student here. People are fed up with this. They've given a lot. They're being nickel and dimed for everything now, and the product on the field has been awful for now 5 years in a row.
Yep.
Well, so I would say the win-loss record of late has been awful. I think people would say like the overall game day presentation, and you've had competitive games. But you're right. This is not a thing that like you look at programs that go through hard times. The fan support will like if you don't reverse those results.
Oh, it just won't. You won't keep selling out
It's been incredible. Credit to Auburn.
It really has.
For what it has been. It's been incredible, but that doesn't last forever.
No. Yeah, you can't take that for granted.
Nope.
By any means. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, I'd love to hear from you. Take a break from the Christmas shopping and join us.
There you go.
Here on the Monday Drive.
on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. Drew at the controls. You just heard, you may have just heard me talking about Game Day Men's Health. A couple of things. They also have, I don't know that we mentioned it in there, they've got some answers for, you know, if you're having trouble with joint pain, healing, they've got, they've got some things for that as well. And they're open till 6 now. They're about to change their hours and we'll be closing at 5, but they're still open right now. If you're interested, you can give them a call, 209-3706. All right, let's get to the drive hotline. That number is 321-1390, and Brett gets us started. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. Talking about Byron Brown against Boise State, Florida, and Miami, he averaged right at 250 yards passing a game.
Nice. Very nice.
So it wasn't like he was just playing nobody's all the time.
No, but even still, I mean, he was playing, you know, level, he was playing competition in his conference with you know, sort of with the town around him. And I point to Pavia and Mateer as guys who, you know, lit up, like, I mean, you could dismiss what they were doing because it wasn't against a major conference opponent most of the time. Their game still translated to the next level pretty well.
Appreciate the call, Brett.
It's good stuff, Brett.
Yeah. Look, this staff knows what they know what they have in Byron Brown, and yeah. I don't think there's any question. They would love to continue having the talents of the young man.
What's your sense of where Ashton Daniels stands in all this? He was Auburn's starter when the season ended. He took over for Jackson midseason. Has that? I mean, the reason we saw Deuce against Mercer, I know there was some desire to play Deuce anyway, but I think the big reason was that they didn't want to play Ashton in that game to preserve his redshirt. So one would think that he ends the 2025 season as Auburn's starting quarterback. You know, what do you think the future, the next few weeks or months could hold for Ashton Daniels?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it will be determined on their plan in the portal with Brown, but you know, Brown has USF has 1 year of eligibility remaining also, just like Ashton does. So you know, I think if Auburn does pursue and get Brown, that would make sense for Ashton if he wants to play again, right, be a starter, to, you know, move somewhere else. But we'll see. I don't know what his intentions are and what exactly he wants, but that's kind of what I expect.
I would think if that were the case that there'd be some interest in Ashton Daniels after the way he played his two starts.
Should be. He should have opportunities. I thought, you know, of the guys that helped themselves those last few games, I thought he really did. Mm-hmm. And I think if it was a different situation, that I think, you know, Auburn and the new staff would be excited about maybe bringing him back as a starter. But, I think with USF and Byron Brown being so successful, more proven, more experienced as a starter at, you know, with these coaches, it makes a lot of sense to go that direction.
And you can point out, and it is true that Deuce has a couple of years of eligibility left and Byron only has one, but I would argue if you decide, like, if that's the choice you're making, and you decide to go with Deuce, if he's not successful immediately as your starter, if he doesn't look ready in the Baylor game and the Florida game and the Vandy game, does it matter that he has a lot of eligibility left? Or is, like, I mean, it's still like
not right now.
Yeah, sure, I mean, it feels like more than ever before, you're playing for next year in college football, and trying to bridge beyond that is, like, it's nice if you can do it.
Sure.
But it's about next season and getting the best possible players to win you games next year. And, you know, while it's cutthroat to sort of abandon ship on the quarterbacks you had this past year and bring in the guy that worked with this coaching staff at South Florida, if that's the best path forward in 26, I think it's what they're gonna do.
Yeah, and you look at what the situation Auburn's going to be in, They've already got 14, I think, now with Seth Wilfred planning, another offensive line plan to go in. I think that number is going to rise over 20 for sure.
Oh, yeah,
I'd be shocked if it wasn't. So Auburn is going to have a lot of room available on this roster to go out and get players. And I think you're going to see them go after some impact guys like Byron Brown at quarterback. And they're also going to have to go get some young guys that can be here for 2 or 3 years to add depth, to have guys at positions you can count on to be backups and then eventually starters. So they've got to address, you know, some starting needs and some depth needs here right away in this portal class.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Inspector is up next. Hey, Spector.
Hey, Spector.
Hey, guys. Just now joining you. Did I miss my weekly report on the offensive line?
Well, we talked a good bit about
a lot of changes in the offensive line.
No kidding. Yeah. I mean, Auburn picked up a commitment from a Michigan signee today. They've had a couple of more offensive linemen announce that they're going to go into the portal. So there will be serious changes.
Yes, there will.
Up front.
Spectre, I think the big news you're waiting on is Connor Liu has a decision to make. Right, he's got a year left of college football eligibility. Was a captain for Auburn, suffered the season-ending injury, would be a big retention, one would think, for this coaching staff if you can keep Connor Liu in the fold as a senior. And without Connor Liu, I mean, you're basically starting over as far as guys with starting experience on the Auburn offensive line right now. That you could see portal acquisitions, but like Connor Liu, I mean, I guess Chaplin has a year left of eligibility. The left tackle could decide to come back. You've got Cale Ellis, who started a couple of games
could be a
this
starter,
year.
Guard our center if Connor comes back.
Tyler Johnson has some starting experience from, I think he started a game or two last season when they were unhappy with Percy. But largely, you know, without Connor Liu in the fold, you'd be without most of your career starts, you know, of the guys in the offensive, you know, with eligibility remaining on offensive line. So that to me is, barring a massive pickup in the portal or something, like the big news on the offensive line, I think the next couple of weeks. I mean, I guess Cale Ellis to an extent.
Yeah.
But I think what Connor Liu decides to do is something you're waiting to see, Spectre.
And another thing, Spectre, is we were just talking about some guys from South Florida that could follow Alex Golish. I believe their most highly decorated guys, I think they had three offensive linemen that earned some all-conference honors. I believe they're all three out of eligibility. So I don't know that I'd look. There might be someone that comes from South Florida that Tyler Hudanik may really feel, you know, very good about and like his potential.
Right.
But I don't know that it's likely that you're going to see South Florida offensive line starters transfer.
They don't have a 6'7", 330-pound left tackle ready to step in and start an SEC yet.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, you're right, Dan. But you have to get in here a seasoned lineman, because we have, other than Liu, we have no seasoned lineman. Maybe Ellis, but you're going to have to get in the portal. You're going to have to go in there and pick some seasoned linemen that are ready to play, not ready to develop, ready to play.
Those guys aren't going to be cheap either.
Well, money's no question, I hear.
Well, supposedly.
Up to a certain point.
Yeah. Well, no, money's no question, but Spectre, we were just talking about it with Malcolm Simmons leaving. Like, you have to decide where to prioritize, right? Like, you can go, if you decide, hey, you want, like Hugh Freeze, for example, last year, it's possible that 4 of the 10 or 12 highest paid guys on the whole team were wide receivers. It's like, you can do that if you want to, but where were you unable to spend because you were committing all that money wide receiver?
Listen, you guys, you know, I'm dead serious about this. All these other players are worthless if you don't have an offensive line to develop the play. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, you saw what happened in the last 2 or 3 years. You've got to have an offensive line, period. And if you don't go out there and buy some seasoned players to play on that, Connor Liu, come back. Okay, you got to get 4 others, especially the 2 tackles. The most important is the 2 tackles.
Right. You might not have to get 4 others, but you better get a left tackle. And you better get at least one other So, yeah, I mean, you might be able to plug in some young guys, but you'd better get some experience. And I'm thinking it surely makes sense to get at least two.
My opinion on Brown, I think he's dragging his feet to see what's going to happen with this offensive line.
Technically speaking, right, like he's not supposed to be talking to anybody but South Florida.
They've got a bowl game coming up.
And he's coaching in it,
right?
Because he's not. How about that? The fact that he's not playing in the bowl game, I think, gives you a clue into coming back.
He's not dragging his feet. Yeah. These players can't enter the portal until January 2nd. These are just players announcing their intention to.
Right.
So.
You know, they're not supposed to be talking to players, so on and so forth. You know, they're bringing pigeons back. You know.
Oh, I think Byron Brown has a clue.
You think his telegram machine works? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But anyway, guys, I'm really serious about this offensive line. If we go to another season with linemen that can't block and linemen that can't open up holes, we're in dire straits.
How about the penalties? How often were you set back 5 or 10 yards?
Yeah. By that? Hey, absolutely.
Specter, I think the last couple of years strengthens your argument, right, where it's like you had the most talented receiver room, maybe the last 2 years, two of the best receiver rooms in program history, and to what end, right, like ultimately?
Yeah.
And that's
absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that's not to say receiver doesn't matter, because, the best teams in the college football playoff have a lot of talent at that position, but you're right, Specter, it won't cover up quarterback or offensive line.
All right, buddies, I gotta go.
Good hearing from you, Specter. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline as we continue with the Monday Drive.
River City Door
with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. That's pretty funny. Auburn. Brian, go ahead. Let us tell us that.
Oh, sorry.
How much eligibility do some of these players have? Give us a little headline you just told us.
Yeah, so Georgia State quarterback T.J. Finley plans to enter the transfer portal. The former LSU, Auburn, Texas State, Western Kentucky, and Tulane quarterback is filing an NCAA waiver for a seventh year of eligibility.
7 years?
Yeah, I kind of doubt that.
Six or seven schools?
Yeah.
Did he spend
He was at Western Kentucky, too.
This will be the sixth if he gets it.
So now,
he only played in three games in 24.
Right.
So he could maybe get that year back.
He has put up, I mean, career-wise, he's put up some pretty impressive
numbers. And 20 doesn't count for
anyone.
He was a freshman in 20, which that year didn't count for anyone's eligibility. So
It seems as though he's played for a decade.
No, but four full seasons where he was...
He had pretty good seasons when he played most of those full seasons.
Yeah, he only played in, I think he played in four games for Auburn in 22, played in most of the games for Auburn in 20, a handful of appearances in 21 and 22 for Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It seems like he would.
Like he'd be done.
I don't know. Maybe not. We'll see.
Speaking of quarterbacks,
they're not doing the waiver. Are they still doing the waivers for to get years back?
They're not granting them nearly as freely as they used to. Saw where DJ Lagway entering the portal there as John Summerall at Florida, and DJ Lagway gonna check his options out.
Rayola at Nebraska, as well gonna go into the portal. So yeah, that's I think expecting a lot of quarterback movement. Is probably, I think it becomes customary, right? Because guys like that and even if Auburn hadn't hired Alex Golish and Alex Golish's coaching staff from USF, like drawing the link between Byron Brown and major conference programs after the season he just had at South Florida, like if it's not Auburn, it would be I think people would think LSU probably wants him, and Ole Miss could see him as a possible.
Sure. He was one of only three quarterbacks to total more than 4,000 yards total offense this year.
And there are going to be a lot of buyers
You know who the other two were? Your Heisman runner-up, Diego Pavia, was second behind Byron Brown in total offense. And the number four guy was Drew Mestermaker from North Texas.
Oh, wow, who will also be another guy that a lot of folks think is going to be heavily sought after in the transfer portal.
Yeah, because he has multiple years of eligibility left. But, it'll be interesting. And Brian, it's going to be – I think it's going to be crazy early in January because everybody's going to be trying to get players as quickly as they can
right. Because
the spring term's going to be starting everywhere.
It is. And, the portal's not open that long. It's just 2 weeks, I think, total. And the thing is, though, with all these players declaring their intention to enter, they're going to enter the portal officially.
That's going to speed up the process.
And they're going to be declaring for their schools within 2 or 3 days, I would imagine. Some of them will take a visit here and there, so maybe it'll be a week. You don't have to do them all on weekend. You can do them during the week. So I think this process is going to move really fast. And if you're a school like Auburn, you don't have anything else to do but prepare for this. You've got to be ready to jump quick.
You want to get as many as you can in the boat as quickly as possible.
Yep. It's all about speed.
Hour number one is in the books here on the Monday Drive. Got another one to go. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. Come on in to hour number two of the Monday Drive.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews. Yes, everybody is here today.
Tomorrow.
Yep. Well, saying it a little earlier, don't know there are going to be many more times. Drew is gone from the end of this week until 2026. Dan's out for a couple of days. Coach Don Dunn will be in for a couple. Now, this is our final full week of the year. Here on The Drive.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll be on Monday and Tuesday.
Okay.
And then we'll take off Christmas Eve through New Year's.
All right. Wow.
We're getting a nice break there.
Okay. So we'll go from next Tuesday to 2026.
2026, the day the portal opens is the day we come back.
What day of the week is that?
That is a Monday? Monday.
I'll be here.
Yeah.
For the fireworks. There'll probably already be movement, I'm sure, that day.
It's a Friday. A Friday.
Okay.
Because New Year's and Christmas are on Thursday.
So by that Monday, it'll
that weekend.
We'll have,
we were talking about it a while ago. That weekend, that first weekend in January, there will be players all over the place visiting places and making decisions. I would say by Monday, which will be the 5th.
When
you're back in.
Yes.
The difference in rosters will be staggering.
Yeah. That weekend, I would be surprised if they're not double digits, maybe over 20 visitors, portal people coming in.
There will be, I'm not overestimating. I would say there will be over 100 players who have changed teams in the SEC. Now, I'm not saying they're all going to go from one SEC school to another, but I mean there'll be over 100 spots that have been changed on SEC schools by the time we're on the air on Monday the 5th.
No doubt, it's going to be wild. Short window.
Short window.
Everybody knowing that you've got to strike quick.
You've got to get them in to be able to have them be able to go through the winter workouts and spring ball.
And what's I think that's why Alex Golish talks about the goal right now is to have as few needs as possible when the portal opens, right? Try to
that'd be nice, but
try to secure as much of the roster.
What?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, even if you retain everyone, I mean, the fact is, this is a 5-7 team from last year. Like, clearly, there's still places you need to make upgrades on the roster, but it's not as though like keeping the players that you envision as starters or as parts of a two deep next year makes the job a lot easier than having to. I mean, you remember Hugh Freeze in that first season was desperately filling that roster with players and taking chances on a lot of guys that didn't have SEC track records and ultimately proved not to be terribly productive SEC players in a lot of cases. And yeah, I think Alex Golish would love to be able to, like, where do you guys see, like, oh, these should be, we've talked about Cam Coleman, people talk about Deuce Knight, like, and I mentioned Connor Liu, you know, he'd be a huge retention because
I think Jeremiah Cobb's a guy you'd sure like to keep.
Yeah. Although they need more running backs.
They do. They absolutely need more running backs.
One or two more.
But I think they're more players on defense, and that sort of makes sense. I mean, DJ Durkin is back, and the players understand what they're going to be getting there from their coordinator there. Yes. So, I mean, you've had a few guys that have announced on the defense,
barring
that they're entering the portal.
Yeah, barring unexpected losses there. Linebacker looks really stacked. Right?
Oh, linebacker looks really, really good.
And the secondary looks pretty good.
Safety
too.
Safety looks pretty good.
Yeah, and then
depending on what happens, I mean, is Ken Lee
right?
Gonna move? Is he gonna try to take a shot at the next level, or is he gonna return to college? I mean, Jay Crawford, you've got the possibility of having a really good. Really good returning secondary.
You really do. I think defensively, it's the edge position, and it's depth along that defensive front, and how good are some of these young guys that redshirted or didn't play a whole lot last year going to be? Like, who's the big nose guard?
Jordan Crawford.
Yeah, is he good enough to be a starter?
Those guys,
right? Malik Autry. Can he be a big part of the rotation? Darren Smith. How much bigger does a guy like him?
Yeah.
Get in the offseason, and what kind of player can he be next year for Auburn?
That's going to be, like, especially with the freshmen that have shown promise, but you don't know the answer to, can they start and be effective in 2026?
Yep.
Like, those are guys that you would think Hugh Freeze and his staff may be paid at the top of the market to bring in to Auburn as really highly touted high schoolers, and you wonder if Alex Golish is going. You know what I mean? Like that's going to be one of those places where there might be a disconnect between what these guys think they're worth based on what they were paid by the previous staff, and how they're evaluated and how they're assessed by the current staff. That's going to be guys like Jordan Crawford and Malik Autry. Right. Like you'd love to hang on to them. But you don't know what kind of role they have going into next season.
I think because of DJ Durkin and Vontrell being retained, they're going to feel good about those guys. They're going to know exactly what to expect from those guys. But even if they are expecting really good things from them, they still need depth at defensive line. So,
no question.
Whether they need to go out and get a instant impact guy or whether they just need some depth pieces, we'll see. But certainly edge and D-line on defense would be the priorities.
But back to the original, one of the points we were making is if you can keep those guys that we were just talking about, then you're in much better position. Then you're just looking for pieces here and there and the best, the best pieces that you can possibly add.
Right.
You're hoping you don't have to do like Dan was saying that Auburn had to do 3 years ago and go out and try to find starters all across the board.
No, you really hope you don't have to do that, absolutely. And the edge room is really interesting to me. It was called the Buck. I think it's going to be the edge now. I'm not exactly sure. But Jared Smith, I guess, even though he's listed as defensive end, I still consider him an edge guy, and I think he could be a special player. But Kieron Crawford is gone. I guess Chris Murray's out of eligibility. I think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about Joe Phillips and Jamonta Waller, if they're going to be around or not.
Yeah.
Those are two guys that have been here 2 years and haven't played.
So, but they were behind. They were behind some guys that could play.
They were.
So.
But they weren't even rotational pieces. Right. That makes me wonder about them.
No, Jared Smith was sort of ahead of them.
Yep. Yeah, he did. And then J.J. Falk, I think, is a guy too. So those are two young guys, J.J. and Jared. But after those two, I think, and we don't know what Amaris is going to do.
Right.
So that defensive end edge spot is going to need some serious help.
Yeah, Amaris, remember, entered the portal and then withdrew.
Right.
A year ago,
certainly. I know Amaris is close with Vontrell, and you know the thought that you're keeping VKW probably helps. You know that's a guy that, you know, one of the guys really telling Amaris' story going into the season this year was Vontrell.
I think he was also really close with Rock.
He was close with Rock too. But no, I would say those are three of my favorite second year players on the team: Amaris, Xavier Atkins, and Malik Blockton. Feel like they'd be huge retentions, right? After if you can keep them as part of your, and I guess Riddick would also had a quiet sophomore year.
Well, he was hurt,
right?
Yeah. Think of how good the linebacker room was this past year and could be.
And you got most of those guys back. Elijah and Diaz are going to be much better players. Then you add Riddick to that. That room is absolutely loaded and can really be a bunch of impact players too. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit. We mentioned the staff a while ago, and we're talking about the offense mostly, having the South Florida ties. I mean, Larry Porter, I guess, is the biggest exception there. Right.
And we know him. He was at Auburn for how many? Was it two or three
four.
Years?
I think was it was four total 17 years? 17 through 20.
Okay. So he's there for the last 4 years of Gus. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yes, and really accomplished assistant coach, one of those guys that's been around for a long time.
Been a head coach, outstanding recruiter.
Yep, knows exactly what he's looking for. I think that's a great hire there at running backs coach. We mentioned Hudanik earlier, offensive line coach, young guy. As you mentioned, played against Auburn in 2017.
Right.
That's wild for UCF.
Probably
in that bowl game.
National championship.
Won a national championship, yeah. He's showing it off to everybody. Cody back as wide receiver, co-offensive coordinator. I think it's really important that Golish was able to bring Joel Gordon over. I think trust him a lot.
I think that's critical.
And then he's got another quarterback guru type, Hayden Kingston, I think is his name. He is here too. So both those guys followed Golish over from South Florida. So that was really big. And who else am I missing on the offense?
I think that's pretty much it on the offense, isn't it? Yeah, because we don't know if there is a tight end. You don't know.
I think that's coming real soon.
So, but defensively, you've got three guys who were SEC defensive coordinators last year on the defensive staff.
How about that?
You mentioned edge. That's where Coleman Hustler is.
Yes.
And then.
The fellow from
DeMarcus
Tennessee.
Van Dyke and Tim Banks in the secondary.
Tim Banks, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a very impressive defensive staff that DJ has over there.
And I think one thing you wanted with DJ's staff is to have a guy or two that you feel like can be the next coordinator. Because you feel like DJ is probably going to get an opportunity to be a head coach somewhere at some point soon with all the turnover we have. Even if he has to go G5 just to get back into it, you figure that might be a direction he goes, we'll see. But that I like the staff, but again, I'm not going to say that the greatest staff in the world.
No.
You know, Auburn needs a staff to come in here and start winning football games, right? And then we can talk about how good they are.
And it's open debate how much of how much of what they inherit, right, is ready for prime time at all those different positions. You would think that because of the way the previous staff recruited, you have more freshman and sophomore talent than a lot of other schools, that have recently fired a coach, right? But it's a matter of figuring out how many of those highly touted players fit your system, fit your culture, want to be here, fit into the budget, and sort of how you envision spending at different positions. And so, I think that's the Once the staff started to take shape, and position coaches are important, but it felt like the really big news is going to start being player decisions from the guys that you envision as, like, if you had to make a two deep of the roster right now, right? Like those starters, we're waiting to hear. A lot of those guys have decisions to make, and you're waiting to hear what they're going to do.
Yeah. Now, of course, I mean, they don't have to. Say anything if they don't do anything.
No,
but they'll be asked.
It's fun. I made this point on the Doug Show earlier today. That it's a sign of the times now that it's like.
Getting announcements that you're not doing anything?
Yeah. The sophomore quarterback puts out a press release that he will be returning to school for his junior year.
That is just crazy. It really is crazy to think.
Yeah. I mean, that's where we are. And so we could have – and, you know, and I'm not trying to ruin anybody's fun, right? If guys want to make their announcements and guys want to put the hat on, right, and you know, get their moment, like, that's fine. But it does, yeah, it seems, you know, like, and now we're waiting on announcements from a lot of the the best
young second guys.
best younger players right. on the team. I mean, juniors too. Right, Auburn's got some juniors with intriguing decisions to make. Kay and Lee strikes me as he's a third year guy who's got a couple of different decisions. We're just talking about Eric Singleton. Like there are some juniors too, but it's feels like those young, exciting players.
Mostly freshmen and sophomores. And I started thinking about it. I mean, because one of the first things that Alex Golish said was he wanted to, and then last week he updated us to he has spent so much time with the players and wanting to know, to find out who wants to be at Auburn.
Right.
And there's a little there could be an underlying meaning to that too, because – how much do you want to be at Auburn? Because we've got a budget right here.
Right.
So, I mean, Auburn may not be able to top everybody's offer, but if they can make them happy at whatever Auburn can afford, then those are the guys that they're talking about. Those are the ones they want to find and bring back.
And I think there's another underlying reason, and that's just that it's going to change the way the standard they're upheld to. You know, he's going to be a different style coach, I think. As far as expecting a little bit more discipline day to day, the way people show up at the complex. He talked about this before, the way they speak to coaches and other teammates, just a lot of little things I think he sees as important. If you do the little things right, it goes way back to John Wood at UCLA, right?
Well, you can,
the way you tie your shoe matters.
You can see that in Alex Golish's background, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Right. So, the players that stay are going to go through a little. I'm sure they're going through it right now. The ones that are a lot of them aren't here now because school's out, right? They're done. But when they get back, in January, they're certainly going to experience some changes.
Yeah, and there's no question about
that. I'll tell you what, all strength coaches look scary.
My goodness, that was exactly what I was thinking of. It's a shame. It's like, all right, folks, we've got a picture of it right now that you can look at here on your radio.
But Jacob. I don't want to mispronounce his name, but he might break a few bones in my body. But I would do what. No, he's a special teams coordinator. Who is the new strength coach?
I was saying his picture.
George Karides. Anyway, he is a very intimidating looking man.
I would do whatever
he told me to do when it came to lifting weights, even though I could barely lift a bar. But you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And you've noticed like there are a lot of South Florida ties to a lot of these hires. Not all of them, and there are some where it's like is that something that gives you any pause? You know how much Golish has been leaning on the folks from his previous school.
Not really.
A lot of these jobs.
No, I mean he brought some dudes with him from Tennessee, right? Yep. And I just you got to roll with your guys, right? And certainly, I think he mentioned that some guys aren't necessarily great fits for the move from South Florida to Auburn, but I think a lot of them are. You know, Tommy did the same thing, Ole Miss to Auburn. It's very successful for a number of years here. So no, I don't discount that. I think trying to go out there and hire some all-star group of assistant coaches who you don't have relationships with, who you don't know how they'll fit in staff chemistry-wise, I think that would be a mistake. I think you got to go with your guys.
Yeah, I think sometimes fans want that all-star that all-star staff, but there's got to be chemistry. You've got to understand, you've got to, first of all, who's the boss, and are you doing what they want?
Right.
And that's something that I don't think there's any question you've got that over there on the offense.
Yep.
And it's DJ's defense, and he's worked with a couple of these other guys
as well. So that's terrific. I think the staff, to me, looks like they're going to really hit it off. They already have, and I think there's going to be a lot of cohesion, which is going to allow them to go out there and potentially be a big hit there when that portal opens if they're all working together and know exactly what they need.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Let's talk a little basketball when we come back. I'd love for you to join in, but we'll talk some Auburn basketball and more when we come back.
It's
here on the Monday.
It's Monday too. Don't forget
we've definitely got Monday musings we will get to before we are done here on the Monday Drive.
NAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Monday. All right, so I lied. I said when we come back, we were going to talk basketball. We will, but there's breaking news as Auburn, I think, has wrapped up its full-time on-field assistant staff.
Yeah, Larry Scott, who has been the head coach at Howard for the past 5 years, is going to be Auburn's tight end coach. He's also coached tight ends before, I believe, at Florida and some other places. So another really experienced guy with head coaching experience, just a really quality hire, again, by Alex Golish.
Interesting, Dan. I mean, you mentioned his son the other day, and I had not mentioned him. He was when there was an announcement, I believe, of three different additions to the staff. Larry Scott Jr. was hired as an assistant. He would be an off-field, but be able to help coaching. And I knew the name was familiar, and I was thinking, yeah, I remember his dad, and now Auburn has hired him.
Yeah, Larry Scott the second, Larry Scott Sr., he was a South Florida graduate and coached on the South Florida teams under, who was that guy? He was there forever at South Florida in the 2000s. He beat Auburn, right? Remember those? Like he was on those 2000 South Florida staffs. And since, you know, stuck at Miami and then Tennessee, he was the interim head coach.
Yeah, interim head coach at Miami.
After Al Golden got fired, he was the interim head coach at Miami and was the tight ends coach at Florida before he was hired at Howard.
Another guy who is Brian, this isn't going to hurt a lot of people's feelings either. Another guy who's known as a really, really good recruiter.
Yeah, that's terrific. I mean, this is another really nice hire by Auburn.
And he's a guy that played offensive tackle, was a multi-year starter at South Florida before he went into coaching.
Yeah, and he was at Tennessee before. He would have been at Tennessee when Butch was at Tennessee as tight ends coach and offensive coordinator, and then he was at Tennessee but did not overlap with Golish.
No.
And that group at Tennessee.
But I'm sure that there are some connections that did overlap. Larry Scott is about as big a connection as his son.
No, that's a pretty good connection. That's really interesting. Yeah. So this is a guy who coached at South Florida and Tennessee, but did not overlap with Alex Golish at either of those places.
Now they finally get to overlap.
Now he's the final piece of the puzzle on offense, and that's a guy when Florida hired him, people were really excited. That's the end of Dan Mullen at Florida. He's there for the last couple of years there, and he got the Howard head coaching job. Was he the coach at Howard when Cam Newton's brother was there and pulled off the huge
2020.
I'm wondering if that because they pulled off the big upset, but that might have been a year before he got there. It might not have been.
Yeah, because he didn't start at Howard till 20.
Yeah,
till 2020. But so I think another nice addition. So that pretty much rounds out the coaching staff for Alex Golish. I'm sure there'll be more staff additions.
It was 2017 when Howard beat UNLV as a 45-point underdog.
All right. We said we'd talk a little basketball. We'll get into that. I'm sure we'll have to take a break before we conclude talking about basketball. But Auburn, solid performance.
Yeah.
Stephen Pearl not thrilled. Elijah Freeman coming off the bench and giving Auburn a third scorer. That's something, that one of the things Stephen was talking to us about the other day, Brian, is, you can't do it with just a couple of guys getting double digits.
No. And I think Sebastian, Adams, wait.
Yeah, Sway. Williams, yes. Adams.
Williams,
yeah.
Adams, sorry. I had it backwards for a minute there. I think he is the type of player that is going to really develop and get better and better, mm-hmm. As you know, being a starter and getting those starters minutes. So I think that's a positive. Plus, he has that size, that rebounding ability, right? So, and they need that, especially they're getting a little shorter there with their bigs. But they also need that guy to come off the bench and be kind of an exciting guy that can start scoring for them. And I think Elijah can absolutely
can be that spark, I think. Mm-hmm. And he did. He came in, had 19, I think 7 rebounds as well the other night. I mean, the thing, once again, though, Auburn at times a little sloppy with the ball. And I think the assist to turnover ratio is something that has been a concern and continues to be.
Need Tahad to be more of a playmaker for his teammates. Also, I think Stephen Pearl used the word pathetic when Auburn, he talked about Auburn's one steal against Chattanooga.
Yeah, the defensive stuff, yeah, I think is really concerning him, and that's where, because
that's him. That's what he's been as the defensive guy.
I mean, I know that there have been some stagnant and even kind of like selfish moments,
right? But they're still
seemingly
put up points.
But they're still I think a really good offense. And you see the moments when they share the ball, especially when Keyshawn Hall, mm-hmm. He can sometimes when he's judicious with his shot selection and he's working to get his teammates involved and scoring.
Yeah.
Tahad's catch and shoot game is outstanding. I just wonder how much you run the offense through Keyshawn Hall in the half court versus Tahad.
It might work better that way.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's something they might, you know, and Tahad as a catch and shoot option is really dangerous. So yeah, I just but the bigger concern to me is they're a bit undersized. And usually the answer to being undersized is we're gonna play aggressive pressure defense. The problem is when you're thin in the backcourt from a depth standpoint.
Right.
When you are like beyond, I mean, you were rolling with Tahad and
Overton got hurt against.
Exactly. Well, after the Overton, when Overton, you know, I guess gets hurt in warmups, and then tries to gut it out in that first half. And there's a couple moments where it's like, oh, he doesn't seem okay. But the thought that it's Tahad, Elijah, Sebastian, and the Keyshawns, right, which is what you had at times out there after, you know, without Overton. And it's like, you don't really, I mean, that's one guard.
Yeah.
Now Keyshawn Hall and Elijah Freeman and Sebastian, like, and I'm
they're wings, fine, but they're not your primary ball handling.
Yeah, and that's
guards.
And that line, and that became the lineup out of necessity, and like that speaks to, I think, Stevens. I mean, you don't know what's going on with Bashir. Simon Walker shows you glimpses as a shooter, but also Stevens lit into him a couple times for his defense.
Right.
I mean, you'd love to have a few more options off the bench at guard. Magwood is someone who I'll tell you, Magwood's also been
he's a shooter,
and I like the ball in his hands. He's also gotten the business from Steven for his defense a couple of times in games.
And but he is getting some assists.
So that's, you know, just, I think the thought that you know, that you have a couple of pieces in the backcourt that need to play a lot makes it tough to turn up the intensity and be that high flame. I mean, remember last year's team was so proud of the fact that nobody played more than 26, 27.
Nobody hit 30.
The minutes distribution last year, it's like, no, it's skewed towards, there's a couple players that probably need to be playing at least 33 or 35 minutes a game for this team, like Tahad and Keyshawn, both Keyshawns.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not even playing Bashir right now.
Yeah, if Murphy, I don't know what, I mean, that
Mecca's out for the year now.
That sounded right. Yeah. Well, with Bashir, it sounded like it would at some point it was injury, and you don't know if it's injury now. Like
I don't really know about that.
He's not dressed out. I don't know if, and he's another guy that.
Yeah. So the roster is getting smaller.
Yes. And then
so they're down to like 9 guys really that you even have.
Yep.
And with Emeka Porum, who you found out this weekend he's going to be out for the season, and that sounds serious. Like the fact that it's some sort of medical issue, and they're being pretty careful about what they say, and they're wishing him the best in his recovery, like whatever it is. Yeah, you just hope he can recover from that and resume his basketball career. You don't know how much of it was impacting. You don't know how whatever it is was impacting his ability to play the last couple of weeks. But yeah, all the best to him at Kapurim, and as he deals with whatever's going on there.
In the meantime, up next, another big challenge. Number 6, Purdue in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
This is a huge game for Auburn. I mean, you hope that they can put it together defensively. They're gonna be challenged once again around the rim by Purdue. And again, Keyshawn Murphy's had a tendency to get in foul trouble.
Yes.
And he's had trouble staying healthy himself.
Yes. They've got to have him. They got to have him
absolutely.
In the game with minutes, because he's by far their best big. Jovic has shown, some
positives. Yeah, he's
positives,
getting better.
But
he's getting better, but, he's, he's not 6'10".
Nope. And Murphy, with his experience, he can pass, he can rebound, he can step out and hit a three. He's a tough matchup. He's just a guy you need on the floor as much as possible.
Yeah, I worry with Murphy. There are times when he's going up and down the court, and it really seems like the knee's bothering him. Yeah. He's clearly playing through some discomfort. He's tough for even being out there. I hope that lasts. Hope he can make it the whole season. Because he's an important part on both ends of the floor. Probably the best interior defender. And without him, you're extremely thin now. It feels like between Keyshawn Murphy, Filip Jovic, and Sebastian, an injury or a setback there.
Yeah, 'cause that's it.
That's it. You could move Hall or Freeman to the four if you needed to.
Against some teams that can be really, really tough, especially Elijah.
And you get back to the questions at guard. We were just talking about for who? Who's going in instead if you do that? So it's early on. It's become you really need some of your load bearing pieces to stay healthy all season long. And if they do, I think this team can hang with just about anybody in the conference. Oh. Purdue's a bad matchup because they're huge, but the SEC is wide open compared to last year, and I don't think it has the Final Four teams and national championship contenders that it had it had a surplus of those last year. Sounds like it's a little bit, it's dropped back a little bit from that, and maybe Auburn can. I think Auburn's in position to compete with. I haven't seen an SEC team where it's like, no, Auburn can't compete with that team. Florida's good, but
Florida's going to cause some problems.
Florida's good. Florida's an excellent front court. Florida's a front court that gave Auburn trouble last year.
Yeah,
right. When you had Janai and Dylan,
and they're back.
And
Dylan and Janai are not.
And you're figuring things out without those guys.
Yeah. So again, huge test coming up on Saturday. That's the 5:30. The other day when I heard that there was it was a promotion talking about coming up this next week. So this early Saturday evening, Auburn and Purdue. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. We may go ahead and get into the Monday musings when we come back. But love for you to join us on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, where every Monday Brian has his musings.
I do.
Which let's get into your what were your sports. What was your? What was
I
your
put out my plan to change the college football playoff.
Yeah.
Yep, go 16.
Let's hear yours.
16 team play at home.
Check
campuses up until
check.
The finals.
All right, I'm
get
all
rid
in
of
so
the
far.
Get rid of the committee and
oh, man,
the
I'm definitely all in.
And the show, the selection show stuff that they do each week.
You're still doing conference championship games?
Not eventually. No, I like the playing games. I like. I do like automatic qualifiers. I just, when I look at every pro sport, it has an automatic qualifier. I just think people are like looking at it differently, like it's somehow different in college.
I wouldn't mind a smaller field with play-in games. Like if you're going to do play-in games to get teams to that, you know, then I'd be fine with like, all right, well, if you're going to have the play-in games, then maybe eight. Is the right number, or
you're not going to get smaller.
But you know, the compromise there would be if you have a bunch of play-in games instead of conference championship games, like maybe you can find a way to do it that way. Yeah. But yeah, I think 16
I like no buys.
Yeah,
I like 16. I like home games.
I think
that's great for the atmosphere. It's great for the teams that earn those home games.
Yep. I like starting in week zero. If you do that, start the entire season in week zero, which is the last weekend in August.
You want to do like Division II?
You can go ahead and
know when you're playing and go ahead and play them and get it done.
And then you could possibly have the championship game on or around January 1st of the year.
Hallelujah. I would love that. I mean, don't you think coaches would love that too?
Yes.
If you're going to have the transfer portal, going to be in early January, if you could wrap up the season, maybe the championship game would be the
later,
only thing
maybe.
That might be played after
depending
after
on the
January.
Schedule exactly.
I've advocated for crowning a champion by January 1st for a while.
It's not going to happen.
It sounds the desire to have those Monday media windows in January.
Yeah.
You know is what they is
well
what
the ratings
really
went down for last year's semifinal and finals because they're so late. If that happens again. People are going to notice, and they're going to have to make changes to that. I feel like we'll see.
Man, I'd love to see it. I would absolutely love to see it. And people go, "Oh, you can't!" Oh, they've been doing it at D2 for I don't know how long. At the for the FCS, been able to do it. Hopefully you do that, and you don't have to worry then about getting in so late and having players that are either. Thinking about where they're going to be playing next year while they're supposedly out there trying to compete for a championship.
You don't want that. So,
and I think they're going
to some ideas.
I think they're going to see declining numbers. You know, not necessarily because I mean, I guess in part, in general, the sport's popularity in the regular season and the week to week sort of like doesn't seem to be necessarily tied to like how many people watch the semifinal or how many people watch the final. Of the sport, and with the way cable TV numbers are just declining year to year, and fewer people subscribe to cable packages that include ESPN or TNT and Turner, and like that's, you know, I think they're gonna they can try a lot of things. I don't know if they're reversing the course on the ratings, just because when your network's in fewer homes, it's gonna be hard to recreate, you know, what you were able to do from 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, this was down from year to year, so we'll see if there's another big difference this year or not. Are you ready for the musical part?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so we're going back 51 years.
51 years. All right,
and
so that's 1974?
1974, yes.
Okay.
All right. The day...
Should be right in my wheelhouse.
Yes. The day a trip to a Mel Brooks movie, and this is another one out of
got
the box.
It. I got it.
Provide the inspiration for one of the greatest rock bands of all time to write a song that became a hit in two different genres in two different decades.
Igor.
Frankenstein?
Yes. Young Frankenstein.
That's the movie. What's the song?
Walk This Way.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Walk This Way. I could still...
I was like Edgar Winter Group? Yep.
Igor, played by Marty Feldman, tells Dr. Frankenstein, played by Gene Wilder,
Walk This Way.
Yep. And they do.
And they, yes. So Aerosmith was the band.
So was it 74 the release of the Aerosmith Walk This Way?
Well, this was December in 74. I guess it came out.
Yeah, so it is 51 years ago. Yeah. It would be 51 years ago now. It came out. I think it's listed as a 75 because it really hit the biggest.
But they were writing writing this album. This is which album is this? So and they had this tune sort of worked out, but this is what
the Attic was it?
I think it is. This was their breakout album, Toys in the Attic. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
Walk This Way was a mid-70s song, and then they did a cover of it a decade later.
Run DMC.
That was the rebirth of Aerosmith. Aerosmith had sort of faded
disappeared.
Away.
Was it a hit the first time?
Oh yes.
Was Walk This Way a big hit?
It wasn't a huge hit.
Okay.
It was a top 20.
It peaked at top 10. It peaked at number 10 on the Billboard 100 in 1974. Yeah. I got 74. That's probably 75. And then 12 years later, it peaked at number 4. The cover with Run DMC.
Now this is crazy because we had we were hoping to see Aerosmith just before Steven Tyler had to give things up because of
the voice,
continuing throat problems that he was having. Am I correct that Aerosmith only had one number one?
That's correct, and
it's the Armageddon song.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
It's a song from Armageddon. Yeah.
Yes.
I think they took a very long time to ever win a Grammy.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
I think that's another one of those bands where, like, you know, pretty late into the. Yep. Pretty late into their mix, they before they were acknowledged by that, and they have the late 80s, 90s resurgence.
Oh, yes. Tremendous resurgence.
And I Walk This Way's the Walk This Way cover with Run DMC is a big part of it.
Yes,
right.
It restarted their career.
I mean, it really was. I don't know that Aerosmith would have just been one of those if they got back together. One of those retro bands.
Right.
A lot of the bands you hear on Wings 94.3, a lot of that sort of 80s glam rock. Like hair metal adjacent stuff, a lot of those bands borrowed pretty heavily from Steven Tyler and Joe Perry too, right? Yeah. There were other sort of 70s bands doing that thing, but like Aerosmith was ahead of the curve on like sort of establishing trends that were pretty ubiquitous with like the big 80s, you know, Bon Jovi and I mean, Axl Rose was, you know, with the bandanas, you know, doing a lot of the same Steven Tyler stuff. Yeah, they influenced a lot of really popular bands that came later.
Cool stuff, Brian. Always. And again, what was it? I mean, what was it last week? I mean, it's like it's such the distances you're doing 180s probably 135s or something like that.
I can't
all the time.
Even, I
we
can't,
go in so many different directions. Yeah.
So much has happened this week. I could not tell you what last week was.
But I mean,
I appreciate it.
I mean, we've had music from 100 years ago to.
Oh yes, we have. We've gone back a couple of 100 years. Let's see. Last week was it was Marty Robbins last week. That's right. Yeah.
So I mean, Marty Robbins. To Aerosmith.
Yep. Bouncing around.
That's a nice mix. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time to join us if you'd like. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Monday Drive.
The Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air family would like
online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 5 minutes or so here on this Monday. Brian, what'd you think of the schedule that Auburn has now for next year?
It's going to be hard again, right? I mean,
well,
my goodness.
Well, I mean, I think with 9-game conference schedules, more and more teams are going to have difficult schedules. I thought it could have been worse.
Yeah. I mean, again, Auburn gets those 4 games. Well, I guess it is a home game in Atlanta, but 4 games, you know, right here, which will have a chance to get up to a good start.
Would have been nice maybe if one of those games in that tough stretch in October.
But, yes, then it turns.
We're at home.
Really turns. I mean, at Tennessee, at Georgia, back home against LSU, at Ole Miss, that's a tough 4-game stretch.
Yep.
Very tough.
But, I mean, the thing is, and again, we really don't know. It's way too early because you don't know what the rosters are going to look like. You don't know who, for a lot of teams, the quarterback's going to be, including Auburn.
Yep.
But if they can win those early games, then they've got a chance. Because November, even though you don't have the big marquee conference game at home in November, November looks pretty manageable.
Yes. You've got Arkansas at home, which should be a winnable type game. No guarantees there.
Right.
You're at State, which – you know,
look, let's face it, those
that's an opportunity.
Those are a couple of bottom dwellers over the last few years in the SEC.
Yep. Then you got Samford, and then, of course, you go to Bryant-Denny, where Halburn hasn't won since the camp back in 2010. Right. Yeah, so at least three of those four games, you feel like you've got a legitimate shot to win, and we'll see what, you know,
have a little momentum,
both teams
maybe.
look like, you know, this time next year or 11 months from now, whatever.
All right, let's get to the Drive hotline. We've still got a few minutes here on the Monday Drive, and Steve is up next. Hey, Steve.
Hey, y'all were talking about my favorite band. You know, you're talking about the Run DMC version with Aerosmith.
Yep.
It's a great Steven Tyler story. The only reason he agreed to do that was he woke up and called his agent one morning and said, I got three questions. What day is it? Where am I? And how much money do I have left? His agent said, it's Tuesday. I don't know, and not much.
Yeah, yeah, and I was going to say, the last one was probably the most important to him right then.
And he said, I think we should do that thing with Run DMC. And that's what we – of course, he sobered up after that as well, too. That was, but, that's one of my favorite bands.
A lot of things had gone the wrong way for Aerosmith there leading up to that.
Well, there's a rise and a fall and a rise again, absolutely, right? Like, that's sort of like, you know, they'd, you know, before – my understanding is that before the Walk This Way collaboration, like, they had released a couple of not terribly well-received albums, and they weren't doing great from a health standpoint. And, you know, then they have, you know, maybe they're more popular in the 85
to... They were absolutely more popular.
85 to 2000 or so. They're one of the biggest bands of the 90s. And so, always cool. They were also one of the first... They were the first rock band to appear on The Simpsons as themselves. And it sort of set, like, that was not, you know, appearing on a cartoon as yourself didn't seem like the coolest thing in the world to a lot of these guys. But they were fans of the show, wanted to do it. And since then, a lot of the biggest names in music have appeared as themselves on The Simpsons.
Well, they reintroduced themselves to a younger generation. They were on The Simpsons. I think Steven Tyler was on a Disney show because his daughter liked it. And
they do the Wayne's World theme, right? There's a, you know, pretty famous SNL sketch with them, appearing as themselves on Wayne's World.
Nice.
Well, and he and Joe Perry were having, you know, you can only work the way they worked together for so long. I mean, you know, he also tells the story of they went and saw Young Frankenstein on acid, and that's how they wrote Walk This Way. They were in the movie. Joe Perry had written a riff, and Steven Tyler was looking for some words, and in the scene where Madeline Kahn goes, you know, walk this way, the stairs are treacherous, he took that line and took his riff, and that was the beginning of the song.
Mm-hmm.
But how long can you, you know, do drugs and drink and do what they do and not, you know, have the issues that they end up having?
Very good point.
They're great, and that time's over. Y'all have a good evening.
Hey, great call, Steve. Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Fun way to... sort of wrap things up here on this Monday. Brian, you got Christmas shopping still to get done?
A lot, yes. Okay. A whole lot. Yep. So we'll figure it out when we'll have a Christmas.
I'm sure you will. Well, glad Yvonne's doing well. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys
have. Yeah, check us out, auburnsports.com. Just had the breaking news earlier today on the new commitment, the new tight end coach hired, all that more, auburnsports.com. Follow me on Twitter /X at BMATAU.
Dan, have a good trip up to Virginia.
All right, I'll be back on Thursday. Tell you guys all about it, and who knows? We might have a big fish.
We may have a special guest joining us by the end of the week. Coach Don Dunn will be in tomorrow. We'll hear from the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, early on as well. So hope you'll join us for the Tuesday Drive, but we're out of time here on the Monday edition. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.